James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Begin countdown. 6... 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you've read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
You betcha. Guy James here. And glad to be here. One of the Methuselahs of Internet Talk Radio. Yes, we've been around over 5 years now. That's right, over 5 years. And on this medium, that's a long, long time. And some of you have been with us for 5 years, and we thank you for that. Are you all strung out? Are you all hungover from this orgy of politics that we've gone through in the last 24 hours? Oh, my God. Ah, man. Stupid Tuesday, or Super Tuesday, or whatever you want to call it. It was everything that the pundits promised it would be. Well, not really, and we'll discuss that today. But it was an orgy of politics. Actually, it was a bit more than I could take. I actually went to sleep and woke up later on toward the final count last night, or close to the final count, I guess. They're still counting delegates or whatever. I just couldn't take it anymore. After all, how much Tweety Bird and Buchanan can one person take in an evening? And Scarborough, too. Oh, man, I get tired of hearing those boys talk. I really do. Especially when I know, and you know, that much of the time they have no idea what they're talking about. So, anyway. Love to have you join the program today, 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. You know, we talked a lot about endorsements yesterday. It seems the big-time Hollywood endorsements and Ted Kennedy's endorsement didn't amount to a hill of beans, did it? And MoveOn.org, did that matter? The only endorsement I can see that made a whole lot of difference was maybe Claire McCaskill's out in Missouri. The rest, I mean, hey, Obama was going to win Illinois anyway, so Oprah really didn't matter there. And Obama got his clock cleaned in California, so it didn't really matter there. I say good about these endorsements. I don't give a damn about these endorsements, as you well know, after I spoke about them yesterday. So the number one thing to me about the entire Super Tuesday thing yesterday, being a liberal Democrat, being the liberal Democrat that I am, was the turnout once again. The turnout. Man, oh man. Hands down. Hands down, the Democrats won the turnout yesterday. Way, way, way above the GOP. Out of all the, 22 states, I think the GOP only had the lead in turnout in two of the states, excluding caucus states. And even Romney and Huckleberry, they lost their home states to the turnout for Democrats. So that was great. traditional GOP strongholds flipped over to being bluer than blue. Alabama, Georgia, Oklahoma, Tennessee, they all had higher Democratic vote turnouts. I'm not saying they're going to all turn blue during the general election, but that was a good indication that something is happening. And the pollsters are going crazy trying to figure out what has happened. What has happened? And all the pollsters and all the strategists, in many ways, looking a little bit silly today. So, once again, and as has been the case from the very beginning of primary season, turnout, turnout, turnout. That is the key, my friends. That is the key to a Democratic victory this coming general election. That is what will win the White House. That is what will take it, give us a bigger majority in the House and in the Senate. Massive turnout. When we get turnout, Democrats win. That's fact. That's how it goes. Did you hear, being lucky enough to come to you from the blue waters and sandy beaches of beautiful Fort Myers, Naples area, Florida, and it's about 85 here today. It is a gorgeous day. Gorgeous day. It's easy to stand outside today and understand why the highways are jammed with cars from up north. Very easy to understand. And you know, it is funny this time of year. You can walk down the street at a mall or wherever you happen to be, and you see these people walking by, look like lobsters, just broiled beet red. And you don't have to say anything. You know they're not from Florida. You know they've got 3 days in the sun from Massachusetts or Ohio or Michigan or one of those places. And they've gotten in the sun all they possibly can, and they just bake themselves. So you don't have to say, hi, you're not from here, are you? Because you know. Kind of a funny thing. And but I was going to mention Florida. Oh, my. We do get them all here. Hundreds of people tried to vote yesterday in Florida. And they got to be pretty angry, some of them did, because they weren't allowed to vote. They called the local election board and wanted to know, hey, where do I vote today? It's primary day. I need to vote. Well, you know, the primary was a week ago. Should have been there. It was fun. We get them all here. We really do. And I see in the news that Maharishi Mahesh Yogi died. He was 91 years old. He lived in the Netherlands. So Maharishi, gone on to his great reward. Now, of course, he is the founder of the, at least, I don't know if he's the founder, but he certainly brought it to America, the Transcendental Meditation. Beatles were into it. Hell, I even took the TM courses way, way back when. I'm talking way back when. Anyway, it works. Great thing. And how about the media right now? They're just spastic today. The media is just crazy. They are trying to make this out as though the story is that the Democrats are all fractured. The big story in the media is the fight, the war, the epic battle between Obama and Hillary, the mud they're slinging, the negative campaigns they've got going back and forth. Bill, Hillary, oh my God, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. It's a Democrats' fight. Never mind that the Republicans have been split right down the middle. The Republican Party is literally cracking up as we speak. We know that when the general election comes, this little fight that we're having right now, this little hissy fit all the Democrats are having amongst one another over Hillary and Obama, you know, we'll go to the polls and we'll pull the lever for whichever one wins. We'll do that. I'm not sure that's going to happen with the puppies coming up in November. I'm really not sure about that at all. There is a huge fracture in that party right now. Huge. And to find out for myself just how bad it was, I hadn't listened to Al Rushbo, as he likes to call him himself, the lovable little fuzzball. Haven't listened to him in a long time, and I know. Guy, how do you do that? Hey, I do it for you. I did it for you. I took one for you. Don't forget that. So I listened to his show for about an hour today. talked the whole time about anti-Hillary, you know, Hillary being the devil, but he never said what he would do about voting for a Republican. Now, you talk about a cowardly bastard. Rush Limbaugh is exactly that. It's obvious that he hates women. We all know that, his feminazi terms and all that. And after his experiences with wives, one might understand how he could be a bit bitter. Not that he should be. Not that it was any of his wives' fault, however many of them it is, but one might just understand why this wimpy bastard has an aversion to women. In fact, it just might come naturally. I know of one woman, and I do, who had a date with him, which lasted 30 minutes. And she got up and walked out because he's an insufferable, egotistical, loudmouth maniac with no class, no sense of right or wrong, and no upbringing, evidently, whatsoever. He's crude, he's rude, he's disrespectful toward almost everybody but himself. He's filthy rich. He's the number one radio personality of all time. I freely admit that. He lives in a Palm Beach mansion. He drives a $400,000 car. He goes to the Caribbean and buys all the whores that he wants. And he's able to send his hired help out to the parking lots of, what is it, Denny's, with fistful of cash to buy him all the drugs that he needs. Goes deaf on account of it. He can break the law at will and suffer no consequences because of it. He's truly one of a kind. I will certainly admit that. But he is a first-class, bona fide loser. I wouldn't trade places with him because self-respect is something I truly value. And obviously, self-respect isn't something he even knows exists. I went on and listened to that show for a while. He was asked what he would do after the convention. I heard one caller call in and say, well, Rush, what are we going to do? McCain isn't a conservative. He doesn't have our conservative values. Rush, what are we going to do? Rush refused to answer. And then he took the cowardly way out. He said, well, he wouldn't vote for McCain. He wouldn't vote for McCain. He would vote against Hillary. And that's what all his listeners should do. Don't vote for McCain. Vote against Hillary. Now, there's the coward's way out for the ladies, the nation's leading radio man, don't you think? Why not admit it, Rush? You'll vote for McCain. You'd vote for Osama bin Laden if he had an R after his name. You know that. Wouldn't matter to you. All you want now is for them to get their knee pads on and get down in front of you and beg. Isn't that right, Rush? Isn't that what you want? And he sat there today and said, ho, 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 ho. I'm a... of course, he didn't say it like that. He went, oh, ho, 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 ho. And it's not like you people think. It's not like I'm expecting the McCain and his people to call me and grovel. That's not what I expect. No, that's not what I expect. That's not what I want. I want a genuine conservative to be on our ticket. You know what, Rush? You're not going to get your idea of a conservative this year. No. No. You will get McCain, probably. You will get another George Bush administration. You will have another George Bush administration if your candidate, and Rush, he is your candidate, like it or not, McCain is going to be your candidate. And when he, if he should win, and I think that's one hell of a big if, because frankly, I think the farther we get toward November, I think the more the American people will come to their senses and understand that we've got a serious crisis on our hands, crises on our hands, and not only in our domestic problem that we have right now with the economy, with our health care, with the immigration problem, with so many problems that we have in this country, not only that, we've got two wars going on. We've lost our self-respect every place you can name around the world. The American public will understand all that more and more as we get toward November. And the American public will put a Democrat into the White House. It'll be Obama or it'll be Hillary. One of them will occupy the White House. Get used to it. That's what's going to happen. So, Rush, you can bitch and moan and cry all you want to. It's not going to do any good. I will say this. Having Hillary in the White House will probably be good for the hate mongers like you and Hannity and Bortz and Mark Levin and Laura, whatever, Ingram, whatever her name is, Coulter, all those. It'll be good for you. You'll have her to pick on for 8 years. You can pound away just like you did at Bill. So think of it that way, Rush. It'll be good for your career. All your right-wing fanatical losers, your listeners, they'll stick with you. They'll stick with you. You know they will. I've never seen too many sheep yet that walked away from the herd. Just doesn't happen. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join the program, and we hope you do. You know, all the pundits have been just going on and on and on for the past few days about how Bill Clinton had really hurt Hillary and that the voters were tired of him and the campaign had put him on ice and the Democrats didn't like him anymore, blah, 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 blah. That's funny. Like it or not, the most popular man on the face of the planet is Bill Clinton. And people would suggest to take him off of the campaign trail. Get real. The states that she won shows you just how popular Bill Clinton remains. And among a few others that she lost, and let's give an example of some of the ones she lost. She lost Idaho, she lost Utah, Wyoming, Nebraska, North Dakota, Alabama, and Georgia. Jesus Christ couldn't win those states for the Democrats, so why would anybody worry about Bill's effect in those red states? It just isn't there. Man, the TV pundits look pretty damn stupid sometimes. They need to listen to our show more often. They really do. There's one I think does listen all the time. Seems like I hear my whole show on his show and later on in the evening. Anyway, that's another subject. But by now, isn't the bias by the national press against the Clintons so profoundly obvious to everybody? Bill makes a couple of remarks that aren't up to snuff, and I didn't agree with his remark, but they pound him and Hillary's campaign for days and days afterwards and write him off as a force in the campaign. You have to be nuts not to have Bill Clinton out there working in your campaign. This is the biggest mistake Al Gore made. He should have had Bill Clinton out there 24/7 with him, but he chose not to. You know, Bush takes us into an illegal war on a lie. He presides over Abu Ghraib scandal, the economy gone down the toilet, the massive lies concerning the Justice Department and about everything else he's done. And the press, you know, they're mum. But you let Bill Clinton mention a fairy tale concerning Barack's war stance, and oh my God. Whether you agree with it or not, you know, that's what the guy said. He's human. Sometimes he says things that don't come out right. Maybe he says things that are you know, just plain wrong. But you're going to try and paint Bill Clinton out to be an imbecile or something? One of the most intelligent men that we know of has been in politics in this country ever? That he's useless, that he's out of touch, he's a racist, he's a stumbler, a bumbler, he lost the race for Hillary, yada, 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 he screwed up. Okay, he's human. But to suggest that they ought to take him off the campaign altogether, give me a break. I will take him on my side any day. Any day. Had a discussion this morning And by the way, that phone number is 866-546-5254. And if you've got a unlimited minutes deal with your phone, 941-876-6896. If you got something you'd like to say about Super Tuesday, Stupid Tuesday, whatever you want to call it, if you got anything you'd like to say about it, give us a call. We'll listen. Did your candidate win? Did your candidate lose? Did you even have a dog in that fight last night? But I had a conversation this morning, early this morning, and I hope none of you have been caught up in the same trap I was once ensnared in, and I was, and you know it, the one where you try and answer and refute Republican arguments. Because it cannot be done. And it took me a long time to learn, but it cannot be done. What are you talking about, guy? Well, you know that you can find a straggler now and then, but by and large, they are the kind of people, and I'm talking about these conservative, diehard Republicans, who are just too damn stubborn or too stupid, take your pick, to actually accept the truth. You can slap them in the face with the truth. You can hand them documentation of the truth. You can hand them video, audio, any kind of proof that a normal person would take, and they will not accept it. Because they've been brainwashed by the likes of Laura Ingraham, Sean Hannity, the drug junkie, by Bortz, by Savage, by Levin, by Gallagher, and a busload of other foaming-at-the-mouth right-wing crazy talkers who've become very popular because they recognize the stupidity of who they're talking to. That is why these people are popular. They sensed, they realized the stupidity of their audience. That is the big advantage, you know, and it's been talked about and hashed over and over and over again. Why doesn't the left have the prominence on the radio that the right has? Well, there are several reasons. And among the reasons is the intelligence of the listeners. They've got a huge advantage over lefties on the radio. They have an audience that is literally like clay. They can shape them. They can mold them. They can make them into nice little compliant elephants, and they do so every single day. Thank you, Rush. I'll have another. Mega dittos. You're a great American, Sean. They've got millions of listeners in their homes or driving around in cars. And I am surprised that many of them have enough intelligence to pass a driver's test, who listen to them speak, push their arms straight out with the palms facing forward, and give the old 1930s high sign. Yes, the success of right-wing radio is due to utter stupidity. Stupidity of the masses who are willing to soak in the radical, racist, anti-middle class, anti-government blather that every single despot in history has used to his advantage. I will protect you. Do not listen to the government. We don't need government. We don't need taxes. We don't need anybody but ourselves. And of course me, your trusty teacher of all things right wing. I will teach you about God. I will teach you about country and the American way. Only I know these things, and you, my faithful subjects, must listen to me 3 hours a day, every day. That's all I ask. Oh, and by the way, be sure and buy my propaganda books and attend my speaking engagements where I'm paid obscene amounts of money to speak the gospel to you about life, liberty, and the pursuit of my happiness. So what I was getting to in the first place here was that I heard yesterday that 64% of Republicans approve of the job Junior Bush is doing. 64% of Republicans approve of the job that Bush is doing. Oh my God, 64% of them. What does that prove? knowing what we know about the lies to enter the war, knowing what we know about the prosecution of the war, the obscene amounts of money we've spent on the war, the countless Iraqis that we've killed, the horrible loss of life to Americans, the terrible cost of lives of the innocent Iraqis who never asked for one bit of this carnage to take place in their sovereign country, knowing the domestic financial crisis we're facing, the budget deficit, the massively increasing national debt, the loss of national prestige, the lies, the illegalities, the absolutely impeachable offenses they performed, knowing most all of that, and knowing that we have an egotistical, ignorant ass as our president, and the rest of the world realizes it, knowing all of that, 64% of all Republicans think George W. Bush is doing a good job? Really? That's what the numbers say. That proves to me, and it ought to prove to you, and I'll get to the phones in a minute. Hang in there. That proves to me that although some of that 64% may be intelligent people, they might know how to teach school or drive a bus or run a small company or flip burgers or be a clerk at Walmart, maybe even be a CEO, whatever. They may have some intelligence. But where political matters enter the equation, they are damn blithering idiots who are totally divorced from reality. Their political opinions are not worth spit. They are unrealistic, certified, bona fide political fools who have no understanding whatsoever as to how a good government should function. They have no concept whatsoever of what a good leader is. They are political idiots, and I refuse to engage in any kind of a meaningful conversation with them because it's more fun and much more rewarding to beat your head up against a cement wall. So my advice to you, especially after one of these little conversations I had this morning, don't do it. Don't engage them. They'll spin around like a top and never give you a straight answer to a question. They can only cite chapter and verse from the Limbaugh, the drug junkie. They worship at his altar of drugs and money and ego, their political zombie, and that is the way he likes it. He gets mega millions of their money, and they get free political advice, and they don't have to use their own brain cells. Oh, my God. You know, I listened to some of that today, and after that conversation I had this morning, I'm just sitting there after listening to him going, uh-huh, uh-huh. Now I understand better than ever. I thought I already did, but I understand better than ever. Oh, God help us. I've talked enough. Let's head on over to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, this is Jennifer. How are you guys?
Hi, Jennifer.
I love your show. I really do.
Thank you.
And I love your little rants. They're wonderful. I called today about Super Tuesday.
Yeah.
I live in Washington, so we have our caucus on the 9th. No, we didn't vote yesterday. But we also, in this county, vote absentee. Everyone in the county votes absentee. And I have my ballot here.
In Washington, D.C.?
No.
Washington State?
Washington.
Oh, okay.
And I put my my ballot in the trash. I cannot bring myself to vote for either of these candidates. I'm a Kucinich person. I can't bring myself. I mean, I know I will vote in the general election, but I don't believe in either of these people, and I can't vote for them. You know, I don't know what I'm going to do. I want to vote, but
Do you believe in John McCain?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
So do you wish to just remain silent then?
No. As I say, I will vote in the general. But I couldn't. I just couldn't. I feel like I'd rather chew my fingers off than fill out this ballot. It's just because I believe so much in Dennis Kucinich. I just would be in hog heaven if Dennis Kucinich were president and Cynthia McKinney was his vice president.
Well, I'd go along with you with Dennis anyway, but, you know, it's not going to happen.
I know.
It's never going to happen. Not now, not ever, never would have happened. I endorsed him during the last election for because I believe in Dennis. I know Dennis. I love him. But it's not going to happen. And I think I did that once when I was younger. I did that when I was a whole lot younger. And I must tell you, it involved Ted Kennedy. But now I keep looking at the other side of the fence. I just keep looking over there. And I see what's staring back at me. And it just scares hell out of me. So I figure I better pick whichever one's best and go with it. Certainly not my favorite.
You know, the thing is, it's hard to decide which one is best. I really think Hillary is kind of directable. I think that if enough people make demands, that she might respond to that.
Mm-hmm.
As a person, I like Hillary. I really don't want her for my president, but. You know, I think she's a decent human being.
And you don't want her for president? Why?
Because I don't believe in her politics. I think she's far too involved in the corporation, you know, in the world of corporatists, and has taken too much money, is too much in their debt. That's my major reason.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Obama is no saint either in that department. He has his share of contributions made by, you know, people we don't particularly love. So, and I think Hillary's health care plan is a little better than Obama's. And I'm still going back and forth and back and forth with both of them, and I just have not been able to bring myself to mark that ballot. If I go to the caucus on the 9th, maybe someone will be able to persuade me one way or the other. But so far, I have not been able to vote.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, my advice to you is just to put a picture of Romney and McCain on your wall.
Oh, God.
And,
God, please.
And look at that on the way into your home and the way out of your home every day.
You know, McCain is a very scary guy. And so is Romney.
You want another George Bush term, just select either one of them.
That's I know. They're very scary. And I don't think this country could take another 4 years of that. So I know I have to make a choice. And I'll tell you what. Talk about holding your nose.
Well, I must tell you, I mean, I'll be perfectly honest with you. They're not my first, second, third, or fourth choices in this whole thing. But I will still be happy to have either one of them as president. I will. That's my personal opinion.
Well, I'd be a lot happier than having McCain or Romney, that's for sure.
Well.
You know, we started out with 7 really viable candidates. Good ones. All of them. How did we get down to the 2 worst?
Well, in my opinion, they're not the 2 worst, but I think Mike Gravel wasn't any kind of a serious candidate whatsoever. I don't think we're down to the 2 worst. I think we're down to 2 of the smartest, that's for sure. We're down to 2 of the best politicians, or they wouldn't still be in it. I can only hope that they have in their hearts and minds what's best for America, and I assume they do. And if I didn't assume that they do, I don't believe I could live in this country anymore. I would have to move.
Well, you see, that's where I am. I don't feel like they are interested in the country as much as their own agenda, and I'm making plans to leave the country.
Mm. Well, I hate to hear that, because I think we need a little time to straighten things out there, and the only people that can do it, I believe, is somebody with our party's agenda. Hopefully they'll carry it out. I certainly hope so. I have faith that they will. If I didn't, I couldn't do what I do anymore here. I really couldn't.
Well, I want you to be right, and I want me to be wrong.
Well, I hope that's the way it turns out.
Yes, I do too. Anyway, you have a great day.
Thanks so much for your call.
Bye.
Look, folks, we've got two people. We've got two choices. And my advice to you is definitely what I just told her. You put a picture of McCain up on the wall. You put a picture of Romney up on the wall. And if you feel like you can go any other direction but toward Hillary or Barack, why, then have at it. But, you know, when that general comes around, you're going to have to do something. And it doesn't behoove me to sit here and tell you who to vote for, but I think the time has come that we have to get serious and look at what's across the fence. I do. I think about that every day. Am I happy that it's boiled down to this? No, I'm not. There are several people I would rather have had as President of the United States than Barack or Hillary, either one. That's not to say I don't have a great deal of respect and admiration for both of them, because I do. I think both of them in their own way. I've only met Barack Obama once and very briefly, so I don't have a sense of his personality. I have been around Hillary a whole lot more. I like her personally. I think she has a great personality. She's nothing like what you see on TV most of the time. But we're going to have to make a choice, or we're going to have to get stuck with we're going to have to get stuck with something like this.
With all the other pressures on their finances, American families should not have to worry about the federal government taking a bigger bite out of their paychecks. There's only one way to eliminate this uncertainty. Make the tax relief permanent.
We need to make the Bush tax cuts permanent, which I voted for twice.
Now, I also support the Bush tax cuts.
I think they stimulate the economy. I think that one of the first things we have to do that I forgot to mention is make these tax cuts permanent.
The Bush tax cuts help get our economy going again when we face the last tough times.
The other pressing challenge is immigration. America needs to secure our borders, and with your help, my administration is taking steps to do so.
And I will secure the borders first, and I will have the border states' governors certify that those borders are secured.
What we've got to do is to have a secure border fence, something I propose that we do within 18 months of taking office.
That we secure the border, we have the fence, and we have enough Border Patrol agents to secure the border, and that we have an employment verification system of some kind.
Ladies and gentlemen, some may deny the surge is working, but among the terrorists, there is no doubt. Al-Qaeda is on the run in Iraq, and this enemy will be defeated.
As the President said, we are winning. We have not defeated Al-Qaeda, but I am proud of the success of the surge, and I'm proud of the leadership we have.
The surge is working. I think one of the things we've seen is it's been a dramatic success. And
I met with my staff and announced that day that I supported a surge. The President announced later that day the entire program.
And the fact is, as we blame the President for the failed strategy, we should give him credit for changing the strategy and changing the leadership so that we now have, I think, one of the finest military leaders in American history in David Petraeus.
Al-Qaeda's top commander in Iraq declared that they will not rest until they have attacked us here in Washington. My fellow Americans, we will not rest either. We will not rest until this enemy has been defeated.
I think the President's assessment is exactly right.
We cannot turn Iraq over to Al-Qaeda and have Al-Qaeda have a safe haven from which they can recruit people to carry out bombings, to attack this country and our friends around the world. It's unthinkable, and that's why I will not walk away from Iraq until we have been successful and finish that job.
I also totally agree with him that the decisions on further withdrawals should not be made by politicians in Washington, but by General Petraeus and acting on his recommendations.
The one thing I do agree with is that we need to leave with victory and we need to leave with honor. And the reason we need to is because if we leave a bigger mess in Iraq than is there now, it is not just going to affect Iraq.
If we'd have done what the Democrats wanted to do 6 months ago, Al-Qaeda would be trumpeting to the world that they beat us. I'll never let that happen. We'll never surrender.
We share a common goal, making health care more affordable and accessible for all Americans. The best way to achieve that goal is by expanding consumer choice, not government control.
If you take the government out of it to a much greater extent, you get it to work like a market and will rein in costs.
And they can, and they will be able to go out and choose their insurer anywhere in America, and they will be able then to get affordable health care in America.
And the real issue, though, let's not blame President Bush for all of this. We've got a Congress who's sat around on their hands and done nothing but spend a lot of money.
I don't think we'd say it's better off than it was 8 years ago. To be truthful, I think the 8 years that you've seen, and I don't blame that on President Bush. I blame that on Washington.
So I think if we're asking, you know, is George Bush responsible for all this? No.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Tune in to Fox Talk this Thursday midnight Eastern, where we'll take a look at singer Sheryl Crow. Find out about her experience working for Michael Jackson.
Michael is, he's not like every other performer. And I think everyone has to sign a contract when they work with him, not to write a book, you know, about what goes on behind the scenes or whatever.
She'll also talk about her problems with Walmart. So be there this Thursday midnight Eastern on Fox Talk, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
All I wanna do is have a little fun before I die. There's a man next to me out of nowhere.
This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
Flying out across the big blue ocean. Yeah, we're living in
Welcome back, everybody. You listen to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. And last song by ELO. I do love ELO. Always have. Great stuff. Kind of dating myself, huh? I don't think their music ever goes out of style. I get so tired of hearing some of the new stuff. In fact, I don't listen to a lot of the new stuff. I am dating myself, aren't I? 866-546-5254. If you'd like to join us here on the show, we'd love to have you today. Hey, you gotta love Utah, don't you? Don't you just have to love Utah? Romney won with 84% in Utah. 84%. That is just absolutely remarkable. 84%. I mean, let's face it, Utah's a beautiful state, the Wasatch Mountains and all that, and the Mormon people are very nice. But you could elect a frog to office in Utah as long as the frog was a Republican. I mean, how else can you explain Orrin Hatch being the United States Senator? They have the strangest political views in Utah of any place I think I've ever seen. And Romney, 84% popularity. You know, it'd be hard to have Jesus or Muhammad or Buddha or even Mr. Smith get 84%. Even Joseph Smith get 84% in a state. Romney gets 84% there. Fantastic. But you do. You look at some of the oddballs. You look at Orrin Hatch. To me, Orrin Hatch, probably the strangest man to ever walk the Senate floor, without question. I've got a thing about Orrin Hatch. I think he's just out of bizarro world. I really do. And he thinks he should be the Supreme Court, the President of the United States, and God all wrapped into one. It's his opinion of himself, anyway. I happened to look at the National Review online. Don't ask me why I torture myself like that, but you know Jonah Goldberg writes for them, the Lucianne Goldberg spawn. He said both of the Democratic candidates are intelligent, highly articulate, and look good. Excessively familiar as she is, Hillary's makeover leaves her looking fresh enough. One may be a Stalinist, and the other may be, as someone wrote, brilliantly below a version of Princess Diana. But they are strong candidates, and their party loves them. The Stalinist really can be effective on day one, since she knows how to work the levers of government toward her ends. This is not the same as executive experience. It is very perverse. It is very perverse experience indeed. Now, he writes this all the while George Bush is pushing for wiretap immunity. His administration admits that they've tortured people. We've got Gitmo going on, and they plan on keeping it going on. And yet, Hillary is a Stalinist? You have to wonder about some of these people. You really do. Taking a look at the market today, I see it's down 51 points right now. So another day, certainly not as bad as yesterday. And taking a look at these right-wing pundits, and I do enjoy that on a day like today. Hugh Hewitt, I don't know how many of you see that glazed-over-eyed idiot. He writes yesterday, Romney clearly has momentum in California, and a win here will send the campaign into a month of head-to-head contests culminating in Ohio and Texas in early March. Romney, by contrast, has enormous energy and an appeal built on the future, not the past. He can easily raise the money necessary to contest the next 8 months until public financing takes over on 9-1, and he would easily best Obama in one-on-ones on television. Now that's rich. That is good right there. Hugh goes on to say, and he said this yesterday, Romney has reassembled the Reagan coalition and may have done so just in time to save the GOP from lapsing into its pre-Reagan days. If the Huck vote continues to dwindle at the rate it has been fading over the past 10 days, tomorrow could have many surprises, he said yesterday. Romney thanked Rush, Sean, Laura, Mark Levin, Lars Larson, and others among the conservative conservative punditry for leading the rally. Somebody better get Hugh and his pals fitted for some padded suits. They're going to be needing them very soon. That is a hoot. If Huckleberry vote, if Huck, he said, if the Huck vote continues to dwindle at the rate it has been fading over the past 10 days, tomorrow could have many surprises. Well, well, well. I wonder how all the Romney folks, I wonder if they all feel that the Huck is fading now after what he did to their boy yesterday. And believe, and make no mistake about it, he bent him over the... Oh, yes. Huckleberry did a number on Romney yesterday. I bet you I heard Babe Buchanan last night call him McCain's little sidekick. Don't you love it when they squabble within the family like that? Ah, oh, yes. McCain's little sidekick. Well, Bay, didn't work out so well for your boy last night, did it? What do you think? Do you think Romney will go on? He is an astute businessman. I don't question his credentials there at all. And will he look on the one hand at the $250 million that he supposedly has? Is it liquid? How much has he got? How much cash has he got to spare? And will he look in the other hand and say, well, I don't know. How much should I spend on this campaign when it doesn't look like I'm going to win? I've got my pride. Do I keep throwing millions in it from my own pocket, or do I give up now and walk away gracefully and say, oh, gee, the time isn't right, or whatever excuse that they seem to use? I don't know. What do you think? Do you think Romney will walk away? I'm betting he will. He's got another few days until the next primaries are coming up. I'm trying to think when the next ones are coming up. I think, what, the 19th? I think that's when the next ones are. And the delegate counts, if anybody ever gets those completely sorted out today, they're about, let's just say it this way so that we don't get ourselves in trouble here. The delegate counts between Clinton and Obama, they're basically equal, okay? There's no appreciable difference between the two today. McCain has got a wide lead on Romney, 6-something to the low 200s. I don't know, 614 to 244. Huckleberry's got about 190, right in there. Rand Paul's got 14. That's right. Ron Paul got 5 in Alaska. He got 5 in North Dakota. And he got 4 in Nevada. So he's got 14. So he'll be a force at the convention, won't he? And Huckleberry's got that 30 from Iowa. And, he got 45 out of Georgia. He got 21 from Tennessee. He got 20 from Alabama. What are these big states here that Huckleberry got? Got 26 from Arkansas. 18 from West Virginia. But McCain clearly was the winner yesterday of everybody. McCain was the winner yesterday. He really came out smelling like a rose out of the whole shooting match. McCain came out looking like a winner yesterday. What chance does he have in the general election? I think he's got no chance against it. You say, now, Guy, don't talk like that. Many of us thought Kerry would win the last election. And he didn't. And maybe we were overconfident. I was not overconfident. You know why? I wasn't overconfident. I didn't like the lack of spunk on the part of John Kerry. I like John Kerry. I like him a lot. He's a good guy. I think he's got a great sense of right and wrong, and I think he does work for America. I think he's a good American. I think he is a truly a war hero, deserved his medals, and I think he probably got more slime thrown at him, undeservedly so, than anybody that's run for office. But he didn't fight. He didn't dig in. He didn't get out the brass knuckles and swing back when the Republicans started sliming him. And I knew when they started that business with the swift boats, I knew they'd get at him. I knew they would. And they did. And they triumphed over him. in what shouldn't even have been a close election because he just didn't fight back. I think right now we have two candidates that will bare their teeth and fight back like you've not seen a candidate fight back before. I really believe we've got two of them like that. And if the Republicans get out their slime machine and do believe that they're polishing it up right now, getting it ready, they've got their opposition research people doing what they can. They're having a hell of a time trying to find anything on Hillary that hasn't already been found out. So they'll pass on Hillary and they'll go to Bill and see if he's been doing anything lately. But they're getting the slime machine all prepped and ready. They got it all greased up, ready to go. And as soon as they know which one of them is going to get the nomination, they will start slinging it like you've not seen it slung before. Be ready for that. That's one of the reasons, in the very first place, as I've intimated to you many times, that I didn't want to see Hillary even run for office because I didn't think I'd be able to stand the slime that'll come flying her way. It'll be nasty. And Obama, too. They'll come after him. There'll be racist tirades against him. There'll be dirty, low-down, racist, anti-black tactics used against him. You say, oh, guy, would the Republicans do something like that? Well, Lee Atwater's dead, but believe me, he's got plenty of successors. Karl Rove is still around, okay? Haley Barbour's still around. There's plenty of them still around. So don't think that just because Lee Atwater died that the dirty tactics of the Republicans died with him, because they didn't. And if you think that a woman and an African-American man will escape the slime thrown from the right, you better think again. Because they're going to come after them like hell won't have it. They will come after them with a vengeance, because giving up the White House to them is a idea so abhorrent that they cannot live with it. The idea that Hillary Clinton, a woman, or Barack Obama, an African-American man, could be in the White House is something that is so foreign to them that they can't bear the thought of it. It's got to be an Anglo-white man. And don't think that I haven't talked to many of them about that very thing. And you know the little innuendos. Well, no, I don't have racial problems, but you don't really think America's ready for a black person to be in the White House, do you? I mean, not that I would feel that way, but you don't really think America's ready for that. And you know, it's the same way with a woman. Are we really ready for that? I don't have anything against, but I'm not sure America. I've heard this from Republicans over and over and over again. And you just want to grab them and shake them and say, go ahead, admit it. At least be honest. You don't want a black man as the president. You don't want a woman as the president of the United States. You don't want it. It's simmering under the surface. And it will come out. And they will use it. They'll use it in the most devious, sinister ways, but they will use it. You count on that. This... This is not a group that will go quietly. Not at all. I got an idea of the hate today when I listened to a little bit of Limbaugh. I got a good idea of the hate. And you should understand that. We all need to understand that. Listen to the Guy James Show here in the Head On Radio Network. We're going to pause for news coming up at the top of the hour. 866-546-5254 is the phone number, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with more.
This news brief brought to you by the International News Net.
A 2007 report by the Committee to Protect Journalists found that worldwide, 65 journalists were killed, the highest toll in more than a decade. 32 were killed in Iraq, bringing the total since the U.S. invasion to a record 174 media personnel killed. Abdul Razak Hekmati, the first detainee to die of natural causes at Guantanamo, was regarded as a war hero in Afghanistan, famous for his resistance to the Russian occupation in the 1980s. In 2003, Hekmati was arrested by American forces in Afghanistan when senior officials say he was falsely accused of being a Taliban commander. Egyptian and Hamas security forces closed the border with the Gaza Strip after 2 weeks, during which Palestinians had crossed freely to purchase necessities.
Top of the hour news brought to you by INN World Report.
Indian Foreign Minister Pranab Mukherjee said Sunday India might face global isolation and possible sanctions if a civilian nuclear deal with the US was not finalized. The nuclear deal has been stalled by opposition from the left wing of India's ruling coalition, who said the deal would give the US leverage over India's foreign and security policies. India's communist parties have threatened to withdraw support for Manmohan Singh's government over the issue, which could result in early general elections. Mukherjee said, "We do not live in isolation. If we do not fall in line and sign the nuclear accord, there may be sanctions. We will face problems." The deal would allow the US to provide nuclear technology and materials for Indian civil reactors, even though New Delhi has not signed the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Senator Patrick Leahy says that putting the Department of Justice in charge of transparency in government is a conflict of interest. Leahy says George Bush's $3 trillion 2009 budget is attempting to shift the responsibilities of the Freedom of Information Act Ombudsman Office in the National Archives and Records Administration to the Department of Justice. Bush's budget request would repeal language he signed into law a month ago, putting the Freedom of Information Requests Office in the National Archives. Leahy says in any dispute over releasing government records, the Department of Justice would be defending federal agencies seeking to keep the records secret. Leahy said that once again, the White House had shown the intent to act contrary to the intent of Congress.
Round up the usual suspects.
Hi, boys and girls. This is Rick Goodner, part of the Weekend Wrecking Crew. And I'm here to tell you that you cannot miss Billy Shears. The man knows his music. The man knows what you're thinking. Tune in and listen. You'll be surprised. He's going to play the very song that you were thinking that you needed to hear. Now, he's a genius. Maybe a bit psychic. I promise you. Tune in on the weekend, listen to Billy Shears Night Sounds, and you will hear the song you've been waiting to hear. And you'll enjoy your time as much as I do. Right here, on the Horn, Head On Radio Network. Make sure you don't miss what you've been waiting to hear with Billy Shear.
I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Play as time goes by.
Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life, you hear me? Give my creation life.
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Get countdown. 6... 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast.
Fellow American, ask
not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hey there, welcome back. Thanks for staying with us through the news today here on the Guy James Show. Lots to talk about. Still talking about Stupid to Super Tuesday. And what a big day it was. Did you OD on it last night? Did you watch it till the very end? Did you wait till the last dog died, as they said, when California finally came in? Taking a look at the map, interesting. Very interesting the way it all turned out last night. And like I said, the delegates are somewhere around even today. They'll sort that out. I don't know that it's still sorted out completely. But the populous states, the very populous states, the New York, New Jersey, and California, Massachusetts, not being the most populous state, but a very important Democratic state, especially Massachusetts being in Ted Kennedy's backyard with his endorsement for Obama and losing it big time. I think Hillary was up by 15 points in that race. That surprised me a bit. Now, and don't get me wrong, I've heard from probably 50 of you about, and mostly from Stewart, but don't get me wrong about this endorsement thing I'm talking about, okay? I don't blame the candidates for having the endorsements. I would do it too. I blame the public for sucking it up. I don't give a damn what else somebody else says if so-and-so's for a candidate. I just don't care. Wouldn't make any difference to me. I'm my own man. I'll make up my, you know, I don't care what the reasons are. And I don't blame the candidates for doing it. If they think it's going to help them, and it does. It does help them. Because people foolishly care what these celebrities think about politics, and I couldn't care less what a single one of them thinks about politics. I really don't. It was brought up to me about Bill Clinton. That's a little different. The man was president of the United States. He was the most powerful man on the planet. That does make a difference, as opposed to Jack Nicholson. You know, I heard Jack Nicholson one time. Someone brought up to Jack Nicholson, and I thought, yeah, Jack, right on. Someone brought up to Jack Nicholson about his art, his craft, his work. And he looked at him and said, my work? Acting? It's acting, for Christ's sake. That's just exactly what he said. It's acting. It isn't work. It's acting. Thank you, Jack. Thank you for setting that straight. As you can tell, I've don't think much of that community. Anyway, odd the way these votes went. We have Obama winning in some states that the Democrats have no chance of carrying: Idaho, Utah, Wyoming, Kansas, North Dakota, Alabama, Georgia. Democrats aren't going to carry those states, so I'm not sure how much they matter. California, Hillary carried. Arizona, Hillary carried. New Mexico, kind of a swing state. Both of those can go red there, go blue the next time. Oklahoma, probably not. Arkansas, don't know. Tennessee could swing. So it's interesting to look down the list of who won what and see which ones the states are the major players. One of the more interesting ones to me was Missouri. And Obama carried that, I believe, by one percentage point. It was very, very close in Missouri. But she won. Hillary won the big ones. Massachusetts certainly being one. California being one. New York being one. Those are states that you just had to win in this thing. And New Jersey, of course. You can't win a Democratic nomination without winning those states. And so I am going to go against the grain and say that that I think the cards are against Obama right now. I do. I'm not saying I want him to be. I'm not saying one way or another. But I think he's got a tougher tougher road to hoe than she does right now. I could be wrong. I have been before, but and there were some interesting weaknesses. There are interesting weaknesses for all of the campaigns left, for McCain and Romney and Obama and Clinton and even Huckleberry. But you know, McCain beat Romney in California, and for my money, that's the end of Romney. I really believe it is. But here you have, and I got a lot of this information, some of it off the New Republic, some of it from Reuters, some of it for AP, so I won't distinguish one from another, just give them all credit. But we have McCain continuing to depend on moderate, non-evangelical Republicans for his victories. That's who McCain has behind him. The hardcore conservatives are not with McCain right now. And in California, in the polls, conservatives made up 62% of the electorate there. 62% of the primary electorate, and McCain only got 30% of the conservatives. That is not good. That means they've got, if he's the candidate, they have no chance whatsoever of taking California. None. Zero. Nada. And in Tennessee, 73% of the voters said that they were conservatives. McCain only got 22% of those people. That doesn't bode well for the Republicans. In Missouri, 65% of the people labeled themselves as conservatives, and McCain only got 25% of those people. In those states, McCain failed to win a majority of Republicans. And that is not good. Now, these people won't go out and vote for a Democrat, but they might not vote at all. And for the Democrats, that's even better. And one group that most of all is dissatisfied with McCain are the evangelicals. Huckabee won 73% of them. In Tennessee, 73%. Hillary Clinton won most of the big primary states, including California and Massachusetts, and Obama won several important states, including Missouri. I think that is an important state, and Connecticut. And he might end up with more delegates out of this, but many of his victories came in states like Georgia or Alabama that the Democrats won't win in November. Or in some of the caucus states that are really dominated by hard-working left-wing activists, God bless them all, who are unrepresentative either of the party or of the fall electorate. Let's admit that to ourselves. And Clinton got her clock clean from the black vote yesterday. But I think come November, she'll get those people back. Given the choice between her and Barack, they went for Barack. But come November, given the choice between Hillary Clinton and McCain, the black vote will go for Hillary Clinton. The problem Hillary is having is that amongst white males and independents, in California, Hillary lost the white male vote 52-34%. That's big. And she lost white independents by 58-30%. And in California, 6.5% of those voters who didn't vote for Clinton said that gender was an important factor. They're wrong, and that it shouldn't be a factor, but you gotta work with what you got. And Obama, as I mentioned before, he had trouble with white working class voters in New Jersey, for example. Democrats have to win New Jersey. But in New Jersey, Obama won only 31% of the white vote. That's not good. I still believe that it's the Democrats' race to lose. if the economy goes completely to hell and Iraq continues to deteriorate or even stays where it is at the moment, and we do hope it gets better, or if there's some sort of a conservative revolt against McCain, and there may well be, as well underway, I think, then I think Obama or Clinton could walk off with the election in November, no problem whatsoever. Now, if McCain can find a way to win back your Rush Limbaughs and the hardcore conservative base of the Republicans, then we might have a problem. The South being what it is, McCain should be able to hold on to that, and probably most of the Southwest. He'll do okay in Arizona, maybe New Mexico, Colorado. But he's got a lot of work to do there. And, of course, as always, the Democrats are going to have to win the far West, going to have to win Washington, California, and the Midwest. They've got to do a better job in the Midwest. Going to have to carry Ohio this time. Going to have to carry Pennsylvania again. Going to have to try and carry Indiana. Indiana and Ohio both hard hit with job losses. One would think that maybe they would want some change. Michigan should be Democrat this year. Illinois, Wisconsin. They've got to pick up those states. They've got to keep those states, the ones they already have in the fold, and pick up some more. They're going to have trouble winning this election. But I think the Democrats are in good position to win this election. I think all of the major candidates have some weaknesses. I do think that the Republicans have the big weaknesses. Big, maybe insurmountable weaknesses. And I love what has taken place, this little war they've got going on right now amongst themselves. I think it's great. 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254.
The following is brought to you by G4's Duty Free TV, a new nightly block of totally foreign shows.
The 2008 presidential race heats up. A new survey finds that, again this year, the number one issue among voters is bullshit. And joining us now to discuss the survey is the director of political polling at the Shuttleworth Research Center, Kip O'Leary. Mr. O'Leary, now we all know that bullshit is the deciding factor in most elections, and this poll says that this election will be no different.
That's right. When it comes to electing the leader of the free world, voters look to issues like a candidate's relationship with their ex-wife. Did they ever smoke? Where do they vacation? What's their exercise regimen? These are the kind of core bullshit issues that people really care about.
Now, in the past, whether the candidates are photogenic has been of key importance to voters who care about bullshit. Is that still the case today?
Oh, yeah, yes. And also, what a candidate wears at public appearances is very crucial to the bullshit-conscious voter.
You mean like where a candidate, for instance, wears a hard hat at a factory and talks about the local union, or let's say we see someone wearing blue jeans in a rural area?
Yes, that's the kind of local crowd-pandering bullshit that people are very passionate about.
Now, according to your research, what will be the top bullshit issues for 2008?
There's so many out there, it's really too early to call. But thanks to the internet, there's literally thousands of websites full of bullshit on virtually every candidate. So voters can log on to discuss that bullshit with other people who share an interest in the same kinds of bullshit.
I agree with you on that. I've even noticed that there's an incredible amount of bullshit being discussed on our news blog as well. Mr. O'Leary, how can we in the news media do a better job of focusing on bullshit and really hounding candidates on these petty issues?
The fact is, you've been doing a great job as it is. If it wasn't for the media, there'd be a lot less bullshit in these elections.
Well, thanks so much. Before we go, do you care to make a prediction for November 2008? Who's the top bullshitter so far in this election?
Difficult to say. No one party has a monopoly on bullshit.
I've always been a big fan of Hillary. She's so full of bullshit.
I think not just talking bullshit, but actually living the bullshit. Mm-hmm. That's the earmark of a true candidate.
Right. And
of
mean when they apply to us the label liberal? If by liberal they mean, as they want people to believe, someone who is soft in his policies abroad, who is against local government, and who is unconcerned with the taxpayer's dollar, then the record of this party and its members demonstrate that we are not that kind of liberal. But if by a liberal they mean someone who looks ahead and not behind, someone who welcomes new ideas without rigid reactions, someone who cares about the welfare of the people, their health, their housing, their schools, their jobs, their civil rights and their civil liberties, someone who believes that we can break through the stalemate and suspicions that grip us in our policies abroad, if that is what they mean by a liberal, then I'm proud to say that I'm a liberal.
Welcome to the Guy James Show. If you just tuned in, you're listening to a liberal Democrat. That's right, liberal Democrat. How often do you hear that on the air and on the internet nowadays? Hear a broadcaster come out and say, I'm a liberal Democrat. I don't know when's the last time I heard that. Anyway, most people use the word progressive and all that sort of thing. I don't back away from it. That's why I like to play that JFK piece. Because I am liberal. I most assuredly am. And I don't see that to be a bad word like a lot of people have allowed the Republicans to beat us over the head with. It's not a bad word. 866-546-5254. If you'd like to join the program, if you'd like to get your 2 cents worth in about what happened yesterday. It is interesting what happened yesterday. No question about that. The biggest losers yesterday... Well, Romney was a big loser yesterday. I don't think there's any question about that. But I really believe the biggest losers yesterday were Limbaugh and Hannity and Ingram and Hugh Hewitt and Mark Levin and Lou Dobbs and Mike Gallagher, that whole crowd, that whole insane, rabid dog frothing at the mouth right-wing conservative crowd. They were the losers yesterday. I don't think there's any doubt about it. They had a huge campaign, a coordinated, orchestrated campaign yesterday against McCain, and it just plain fell flat. It did not work. And they thought it would work, because last year, if you remember, I know many of you do, they very successfully convinced the Republicans in Congress to vote against that comprehensive immigration reform. Right-wing hate radio did that. And so they thought that they would be able to do this again in this primary election. And let's face it, Junior Bush and his people have kissed their asses from the very beginning of their administration, inviting them into the White House for the past 7 years, giving them exclusive little soirees where they could all get together and go back to their audience and say, oh, I got together with the president yesterday. I heard Neil Bortz bragging about it. Oh, yes, I went to the White House. I got to rub shoulders with the president. Oh, yes. Well, that's... And with the high-ranking officials, they've had unfettered access to all the people. But all of that could be changing. Because these right-wingers in the past couple of weeks have trumpeted up a huge campaign in the Republican primary. They've really got the hots, got the branding irons out for anybody that doesn't suit them, that isn't conservative enough for them. They've been running the show for a long time. They've had their way. And so they think they could call all the shots now. Forget the fact the country's gone to hell in a handbasket. These right-wing talkers actually believe that they had the power this time to swing an election toward their guy, who happened not to be John McCain. And so I think they're the big loser yesterday. I think they proved it. The results of that election yesterday tells me that the right-wing hate mongers on the radio, the drug junkies and the Hannitys and those people, they're beginning to lose their power. And the American Republicans voted against those people yesterday. And I thought that was pretty good. I really enjoyed it. You take immigration, for example. You know, Lou Dobbs, the one-man band for the immigration reform. Oh, don't you get tired of seeing the anguish on Lou Dobbs' face every night of the week? And I don't watch this every night, but you can bet money out of his 60 minutes every night. Let's see, there's 30 minutes of commercials, somewhere around there. And 30 minutes of him ranting against people from south of the border. That's what Lou Dobbs' show is every night. He lost yesterday. The economy was the number one issue to the minds of the Republicans yesterday. Immigration was second. Now, imagine that. I'm embarrassed by the fact the economy was number one with the Democrats, with the war second. But with the Republicans, the war was third. Yes, the economy was first, immigration reform was second, and the war. Guys getting their heads shot off and stuff like that. That was third on their list of concerns. So, you would think that good old Lou would have gotten everybody to vote for Romney yesterday, because Romney most assuredly has a tougher view against illegal immigration than John McCain does. Didn't work. And I saw that not long ago, former Senator Trent Lott, he said talk radio is ruining America. Well, he's talking about right-wing talk radio. That's the only kind there is, let's face it, of any consequence, of any numbers. And an advisor to former Arkansas Governor Huckabee piled on late last year saying Rush Limbaugh doesn't think for himself. And Limbaugh went after comprehensive immigration reform. And he still holds that against McCain, that bipartisan McCain-Kennedy bill. And Limbaugh has said that McCain stabbed his own party in the back. I can't tell you how many times, Limbaugh said. Yet, as conservative pundit Bill Kristol said last night on Fox News, right-wing radio has been unable to convince the public that immigration is the paramount issue. Immigration is the paramount issue. God, that's amazing. That's an incredible statement. I mean, it's an issue. There isn't any question. It's a big issue. But to say it's the paramount issue when we've got two wars going on and an economy in the toilet, these people really are half nuts. They really are. And that's what I said. Why I said earlier on in the program, it's difficult to have a serious conversation with any of them. One would love to have a meaningful discussion with them, a give and take, but you can't do it. Not when you've got a couple of wars going on and one of their prime spokesmen, Bill Kristol, comes out and says that immigration is the paramount issue. How do you have a meaningful discussion with somebody that thinks that way? People getting arms and legs shot off every day, and he said, well, that's number one, you know. I don't know. It's odd. The New York Times columnist, David Brooks, last week wrote, can we please stop pretending that immigration is a good issue for Republicans? It's not a good issue for them. They could prove that yesterday. They can't win on that. Even in Florida. 58% of the Republican voters in Florida, right here, in an area filled with illegal immigrants, said they preferred either a path to citizenship or some sort of a temporary worker program. And all down the line, the right-wing hate radio lost yesterday on things that they just abhor. You know, the global warming issue. They're still fighting against the scientific evidence, a consensus, if you will. that global warming is a real and urgent danger. They just won't accept a bit of it. That crazy, crazy man, Glenn Beck, he continues to go after Vice President Gore every time he can. He had a documentary on called Exposed, The Climate of Fear. Says Al Gore's version of climate change has no longer become science. Well, that's Glenn Beck. Don't forget that. Of all of them, he's probably the craziest one of all. But Limbaugh's going after the McCain-Lieberman bill. That's a very mild, modest proposal that was seeking to limit greenhouse gas emissions. And even they're against that. So they're on the losing side of that issue as well. And on the economy. The economy yesterday is the number one issue for Democrats and Republicans. 4 out of 10 Republicans ranking it the number one issue on their mind. Although 52% of Republicans say the economy's doing well. Another reason why you can't have a meaningful conversation with one of them. The economy's doing well. Half of them think the economy's doing well. Now, we know half of them aren't rich. We know that. And yet, half of them are still willing to say that the economy's doing well. I think your average Republican could have a home in the middle of a housing development where every family is being foreclosed upon, and every family is having their car repossessed, and every family is losing their jobs, and none of the other families in their development had health insurance. I think the average Republican could be living in a housing development of that sort. And as long as they had a job, as long as they had a car, and as long as they were making their house payments, they would say the economy was doing damn fine, thank you. That's how it is with your average Republican. That's why 52% of them say the economy is doing well. Now that number is down from 66% just last month. And 82% last June, when we told you right here on this program that what is here now in the way of an economy was coming. You could see it coming. And yet last June, not even a year ago, 82% of Republicans, oh no, economy is really good. And yet you've got the Republicans that are hanging on, continuing to hang on, to Junior Bush's completely failed economic policies. And a quote from Limbaugh, he said, frankly, folks, I don't find it very conservative. I don't even find it Republican to start talking about wealthy people or hardworking entrepreneurs as somehow the problem, as the enemy that needs to be punished. Well, nobody said that they were the enemy need to be punished. They're making a straw man right there. Most people were just saying we need a progressive tax system in this country. He's all over McCain, who voted against Bush's tax cuts in 2001 and 2003, because, as we all know, they overwhelmingly benefited the wealthy. And now McCain says he's going to make them permanent. So, a lot of GOP voters yesterday appeared dissatisfied with Junior Bush's administration policies, and they voted against the wishes of Hate Radio. They did. And some members of the right-wing radio recognized that they needed change to stay relevant. And Michael Medved, he got his start by hosting Limbaugh's show. He recently wrote The Big Loser in South Carolina. In fact, was talk radio. a medium that has unmistakably collapsed in terms of impact, influence, and credibility because of its hysterical and one-dimensional involvement in the GOP nomination fight. Well, hurrah for you, Michael Medved, for seeing it like it is. Big loser yesterday. Limbaugh, Hannity, Ingram, Hewitt, Mark Levin, Glenn Beck, the whole boatload of crazy right-wingers. I had another quote here from Hugh Hewitt. Said it's stunning that Fox can't call last night. He was saying it's stunning that Fox can't call Arizona for John McCain. In the very likely, unlikely event that McCain loses his home state, I don't think his campaign could recover any more than Romney could survive a loss in Massachusetts or Huckabee a loss in Arkansas. Given the Rush blast, the Dobson Declaration, and Huck's strength in the South, McCain can't be considered a frontrunner by any conventional standard. Hewitt said, all eyes on California. Well, Hugh, we did start having all eyes on California. And it didn't turn out so well. McCain won it. He also won his home state by 14 points. And I happen to believe that the Rush Limbaugh meddling, along with that charlatan James Dobson, will only help McCain in the long run. And I believe moderate conservatives are getting sick to death of getting talked down to by these clowns. So, we have an interesting situation as a result of yesterday. And I don't think it's going to be a bed of roses for the Democrats. We could turn out with we could turn out to have a rough road ahead. We might be heading for a real mess if this thing gets to the convention. We already have a mess in the way we run a primary. I think everybody knows that. I think one can definitely see a scenario where Obama. I can figure one that the cards fall just right. Obama might get to the convention with more delegates than Hillary's got, but she could end up with the nomination. That could be something that could happen, and that would be because of the superdelegates. And believe me, if that did happen, I don't think the Obama people would go away happy. Well, I don't like this superdelegate situation. I don't like it a bit. Let's head on over to the phone. Hello, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy. It's your old friend Dave from Southern Cal here.
Hi, Dave.
One of the things I'm hoping maybe you and your staff of dozens or some people that head on could try to find out, well, how areas that had paper, how they went. And how the areas that had the machines, how they went, and to see if there is a difference.
I don't know. I would think the campaigns, if they felt that there was anything wrong at all, would have certainly tracked that down, and I haven't heard a word from either one of them. In fact, I asked that very question of somebody in the Obama campaign, and they said they had heard of no irregularities whatsoever, and believe me, if they had, I believe they'd be in there digging at them right now. Of course, it wasn't that close in California, so I don't know.
Well, they wanted the recount in New Hampshire, and what they discovered there was that all the boxes were pretty much left open, and then they had a box that was open there that was full of seals. So if you went in and played with the ballots, you could then seal the box.
Yeah.
I'm a very suspicious person, and I know you well know that.
I know. But, Dave, I got to tell you, I know I haven't talked to anybody inside the Clinton campaign yet, but the Obama campaign lost that race in California yesterday, and they're raising no objections to it whatsoever that I can see. I haven't
In fact, I've got somebody looking for that for me, and they haven't come up with anything yet. So that was one of the first things I thought of this morning. Let's find out if there's going to be any of that sort of allegation coming out of California. And there was none as of yet. So I have to think if there was anything, if there was any suspicion from the Obama campaign, we certainly would have heard it by now. But quite frankly, I haven't.
One thing I know about the candidates is they don't want to say or do anything that makes them look like they're a bad sport. That's not a gracefully able to accept whatever happens to them.
Well, that could be true. It could be true. But I think with all this on the stake at stake right now, I believe Hillary or Barack, either one, would go for the throat at the against the other side if they thought there was any chicanery going on.
Mm-hmm. Well, they didn't, even in New Hampshire, and because Senate, he felt he was dispensable, that he was, even though everybody seemed to prefer Kucinich, he was getting so few votes. And that triggers my suspicions again. Why? Why is that happening? Mm. You, me, damn near everybody, my first choice is Kucinich. You hear that everywhere, but...
Well, I have to tell you, and I think I mentioned on the show not long ago, we had a straw poll at the local Democratic Club, and such was not the case. Dennis wasn't, although everybody in the room expressed their admiration for Dennis, he didn't carry the day. In fact, he ended up with like one vote. So, you know, I have to wonder. Maybe a lot of people love Dennis. Maybe a lot of people would like to have him for president, but when the rubber met the road, they pulled the lever for somebody else. I have to wonder about it.
I mean, so often I heard, you know, Dennis is my first choice, but is he electable? Well, mm-hmm. Of course, if everybody that said that voted for him, of course, you know, then unless it was totally rigged, he would be it.
Yeah, if everybody voted and said that, but I think we've learned from the polls that can't believe what everybody says when they go in and vote. It's just like the Bradley phenomenon, you know, that happened there in L.A. Everybody said, well, you know, the black issue. A lot of people say, no, I'd have no reservations about voting for a black person. And they go in and say, yeah, I'm in a pig's eye. I don't know. It's hard to figure. But I do know this. I do know that the campaign of Obama has no reason, they say, to suspect anything wrong. They've not even brought it up, and I think they would in this campaign. I really believe they would.
Well, one other last thought for you, Guy. So much I appreciate your program, but if you, for us, listen to the Rush and Sean, do you ever get tempted to call them?
I would never get through to them. I did this tirade 3 or 4 years ago about Limbaugh, and the very next day he mentioned it on his show. And so I sent him an email, and I got back a nasty email from his staff saying that he would never lower himself to speak to me. I challenged him to come on the show and talk about the issue that I wanted to discuss with him. And I got a note back, a rather testy note from his staff saying that he wouldn't, a man such as himself would never waste his time with a nobody like me, you know, so.
Well, literal interpretation means he doesn't wish to be slapped around the room and thinks you just might be capable of it.
I would prefer to think that's the case. But I want you to know, Dave, I might have been selfless in listening to that program today, but I'm not doing it tomorrow, Dave. I can only stand so much.
I can relate. I find them, they really suffer to listen to them.
Oh,
everything is a lie.
He was today. He was suffering today. Believe me, he was really, really suffering. He was indignant. He was angry. It was great. I did enjoy it, I must tell you.
McCain is even going to try to fund climate change measures. He thinks even if it's wrong, it'll only make the atmosphere better, so he's going to do it.
Yeah.
And that's right in their face. You mean you're going to ask us, the rich, to be paying for your...
Yeah, well, I like the attitude of even some of the people that are not sure. They're not completely on board with the climate problem, the global warming, but I like it when they have the attitude, hey, what if we're wrong? I think McCain's kind of got that attitude, and I appreciate that anyway. I love it when someone has at least got the good sense to say, what if we're wrong? Let's take some precautions, and I think that's probably where he's at right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did. He said it in the last debate. That was asked of him. Yes.
Yeah.
I would definitely try to pursue it because what if they're right, and we're killing the planet we're living on.
Yep, it'd be tough to figure it out the day before it happened. You know, oops. We don't want one of those oops moments. Thanks for your call, Dave. Good to hear from you.
Thank you for being there, guy.
I got a nice note from my friend Marcus Vidal. And Marcus moved not long ago to Tennessee, and now he's going to be moving back home to Illinois. And anyway, he sent me a nice personal note. And then this other note of 10 reasons why the Democrats need to win the White House in 08. In order of importance. Number one, to get the country back in the right direction economically. Number two, to regain our civil rights lost by Bush, such as illegal wiretapping of U.S. citizens, regaining habeas corpus, renewing the Geneva Convention rules. Number three, sending the troops home as soon as possible and ending the occupation of Iraq. Number four, the next president will probably nominate two judges to the U.S. Supreme Court. If the president is a Republican, the judges will be right-wing and continue the rulings that benefit the corporations, not to mention civil rights and reproductive rights may be in peril. Number five, a Democratic president will make sure that universal health care is implemented and as soon as possible. Number six, getting a Democrat back into office will help America regain the respect from other countries that we lost since Bush got into office. Number seven, to get the balance of power back that Bush took away from the other two branches of government. Number eight, ruling the country with pride and truths, not by fear and tactics and lies. Number nine, if a Republican gets in there, we may never know how much corruption the Bush administration has been doing. No doubt a Republican president will continue the massive cover-ups. And number 10, getting jobs coming back to this country while paying off debts we owe China and other countries so that they never, quote, own us. Thank you, Marcus. That's a damn good list. I wholeheartedly agree with that list, and I'm sure we can all add on to it. But I appreciate that. I appreciate getting your email, and I appreciate the good thoughts. Stuart and I have had a great intellectual exchange of ideas in the past few days, and I appreciate it when you send your deep thoughts and challenge me on something I've said. I like to be stimulated in that way, and I do appreciate it. I know you're listening, and I know you take to heart to what I say. And think and are thinking about it, and when you challenge me on something I say, I respect that, and I'm a big boy. I can stand it. 866-546-5254. We haven't talked a lot in the last couple of days about this new budget, and it is a problem. And there are many things in this $3 trillion budget, $3 trillion, but there are no new ideas in it. There's no assistance. There's no relief for the people in it. And during a year when all the signs that we see now, all the economic trends are pointing toward a slowing economy, this president still insists on providing tax cuts for the wealthy, and funneling ever more money into the Iraq war, rather than even considering offering real reform and support for hardworking American families. Instead, he comes up with this $300 check debacle. And following up, and I do want to mention it again, If you're looking for one big difference between a Democratic administration and a Republican administration, I will tell you this. You will not find a Democratic president in the history of this country, and hopefully not now for forevermore, who would ever veto a bill, a health bill for children. The CHIP program. It's absolutely indefensible that he vetoed a kid's health bill. That shows you his mindset. That shows you his priority. That shows you the priorities of the Republican Party, of the Republicans in Congress, that they wouldn't even shoot down his veto of a kid's health care bill. Kids. You want to know why I couldn't vote for a Republican? Not ever. That is why. They couldn't even get enough Republicans to go along with them. The Democrats couldn't, to override that SOB's veto of the Children's Health Insurance Program. Under this Bush proposal, the program can't even continue to serve the children who are currently eligible for the program. And he also wants drastic cuts to Medicare and to Medicaid. And these are programs that offer health security for many, many families. And they're more important than ever right now when we're facing some very hard economic times. And Bush's solution for the rising cost of health insurance and the growing number of uninsured Title III really, when you stop and think about it, really simplistic principles. And he seems to be so proud of this. Ask people to pay more out of their own pockets for health care. Hey, how do you do that when you don't have it, Junior? And he says to create tax breaks that provide little or no help to low-income families. Tax breaks for the low-income family? Yeah, thanks. Thanks a lot. And also to provide no government oversight of the behavior of the insurance companies. Unconscionable behavior. We haven't talked a lot about it this week, and maybe we'll get a chance to talk about it more tomorrow, but this budget, this new $3.1 trillion budget of Junior Bush and his administration and his financial advisors, economic advisors, and like the many of his budgets over the last 7 years, they offer an unmistakably clear insight into the Bush administration's priorities for our health care system. Priorities that place the working Americans at risk. This budget and what it has in here for the health insurance and all, this shows you exactly the mindset of the Republican politicians and the Republican Party toward the working Americans. And the message is, screw you, we don't care. We have ours, we don't care if you have yours, we don't give a damn. And your kids, hey, tough. Just hope they don't get sick, huh? You want to know the differences between the parties? You want to know why I sit here and say I'm proudly a Democrat? Now I'm a liberal Democrat, and I believe in social programs for people. And I don't believe in some of the excesses we had back during the Johnson administration. No, I don't. I don't believe in wild spending. But I also know that the government here is here to protect the people. And they're here to protect us militarily. And I also believe that right behind that we need protection for our health. If there's anything people deserve from their government, it's protection by the military from invading forces, and we deserve protection for our health. If we don't have those two things, if we're not willing to spend money for those two things to help each other, then we are not a great society. And if we don't develop that, if we don't develop a healthcare system in this country for everybody, then we will never be the society, the great society that we should be. We are lagging so far behind other developed nations in this world on healthcare. So far behind that it's just absolutely unconscionable. No, we cannot call ourselves a great nation again until we address this issue. And God knows Bush certainly did not address it in this new budget. And the Democrats need to stand on the steps of Capitol Hill and yell it loud and long that something has got to be done about this. And this has got to be the major issue in the election this fall. One of the major issues. Got to be right there at the top. Health care for everybody. We deserve that from one another. We owe that to one another. It must be. I want to thank you for listening to the program today. I appreciate it very much. Appreciate hearing from each and every one of you, all of your comments. Always good to hear from you. You're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Thanks to Billy Shears for all the great tunes. And don't forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. See you tomorrow, gang.